We're holding on page Lamed Vov in Ksubas Ois Chof. We learned last time about, actually, I'm sorry, Ois Yud Tes, sorry, page 70, Ois Yud Tes. We learned last time about, we learned that there were a number of Chachamim in those times where when a Chassan was getting married, they would send him off to learn for 12 years. In Yeshiva, we talked about a couple of reasons why 12 years. The last story we had was involving Rav Hananya ben Chachinai, where he went away for 12 years to learn, and then when he came back into his house so suddenly that his wife, from the shock, passed away, and he had to daven for her to be revived. By the way, at the end, actually, one of the participants here, I don't remember now who, asked why the Gemara had to mention the point at the beginning that that it was at the end of Rashbi's wedding, and Reb Shimon asked him, "Wait for me, and we'll go together." And Reb Hananya didn't want to, and he went by himself. Why is that point important to the story? Ben Yehoyada says actually that explains how is it that with his tefillah alone he was able to revive his wife. After all, we find by Elisha, for example, with the Bnei Isha HaShunamis, he had to not only daven, he had to stretch himself over him and, like, so to speak, breathe life back into him. So that was in the schus that because he was so eager to go learn Torah that he wouldn't even wait for his good friend Reb Shimon to travel together, even though Bederech Klal people usually prefer to travel together. Okay, so Ois Yud Tes, the Gemara says, Reb Chama bar Bissa also Yosef Tre Shni Bebei Medrash. Reb Chama bar Bissa also went just to learn for 12 years in the Beis Medrash. Kiyosa, when he got back to town, Omar, he thinks to himself, Loi Evid could Ovid ben Chachinai. I'm not going to do like Reb Hananya ben Chachinai did and come into my house so suddenly and shock my wife. Instead, Ayo Yosef ben Medrash, so he went and sat in the local base medrash in town. Sholach lebeis, and he sent a message home that I'm back. Also, Reb Oshia Bre Yosef Kameh. So now Reb Oshia, his son, came and sat in front of him to learn Torah, have a mashal leshmita, and Reb Oshia, the son, is asking Reb Chama, the father, questions in halacha without knowing that this is his father. And without them knowing who each other was, Reb Oshia didn't, well, maybe Reb Oshia recognized his father, but in any case, Reb Chama did not recognize his son, Reb Oshia. He saw that what Reb Oshia is saying, his questions in Torah and his statements in Torah are very sharp. He felt bad. Omer, he thinks to himself, if I had stayed here in town, I could have had a child like this. I could have been raising a child, a great Talmid Chacham like this one. He comes home, and then his son, the same Reb Oshia, came in and stood up in front of him. Who suffer, or no, or come kame. He stood up in front of he stood up in front of in front of his father. Who suffer a mishal shmaitzak a boy. So Reb Chama thought that maybe this is the same younger man, the same bacher from the Beis Medrash. She came to ask him more things. So no, actually, what it was kom kameh is actually Reb Chama stood up in honor of Reb Oshia because he had seen in the Beis Medrash that he's a distinguished Talmid Chacham, and he thought he's coming to ask me more things in Torah. I should stand up in respect for him. Omer lo dvesu, so Reb Chama's wife tells him, "Mi ika abba dekoy mekame yenuka or bra? Since when does a father stand up in honor of his son?" So then Reb Chama realized that this is actually his son. Kori alei Rami Bachama. So Rami Bachama later on applied to this. You have the pasuk va'achutam ashulosh a threefold, a three ply rope is not easily is rope or string or whatever is not easily broken. Zerab Oshia b'noshirab Chama Barbisa, where they have three generations of Talmid Chachamim one after the other in the family. Rabisa was a Talmid Chacham as well. He's mentioned in a couple of places in Shas. Then you have his son Reb Chama, and now you have the third generation Reb Oshia.
Cash, why did they recognize each other? I missed
Because
that.
he'd been away for 12 years. He'd been away for 12 years. Meanwhile, his son had grown up. You know, the same way as the brother.
Credit.
What?
Why isn't the wife getting credit?
Why isn't the wife getting credit? She gets credit. Yeah, for 12 years she's waiting.
She should be one of the Chuda Meshulos, no?
That's, well, you're going to see in the next story of Rabbi Akiva where she gets all the credit. But yeah. Tosfos, by the way, points out that we find in a different Gemara that actually Reb Bissa was still alive when all of this took place. We find Reb Oshia talking in Torah with Reb Bissa. So therefore, it really is a Chuta Meshulosh. It really is a threefold cord in the sense that each of them is able to learn with the other one. That also would explain why the wife is not mentioned over here because she enabled it all to happen, but she's not part of that chain of the three generations who are talking in Torah with one another.
They mention the age of the son over here or no?
No, doesn't say.
No, because
Doesn't say.
Yosef, he
Yosef was
had
17
no
and he had a
beard, now
beard.
he has a
New.
beard and they can't recognize him.
Okay, but Pashtus is the same kind of thing over here. When Reb Chama left town, his son was probably little. He may have only just been born, you know. I mean, we said that they usually went for 12 years right after they got married. So yeah. So that's Tosfos points out again that all of them were living at the same time. On the other hand, Marshall points out the fact is here it doesn't say anything about them asking Rabissa. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, how does Reb Oshia come to be so wise in the first place? Is because Rabissa, his grandfather, was teaching him all those years. So therefore, so it really is a chota mesholosh where the father is not available and the grandson steps in and teaches his grandson Torah, which the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, that's what he has a responsibility to do anyway. Then that's really the chota mesholosh. There is a lot of talk about that, though, by the way. I mean, unfortunately, you see families that for generations were Talmid Chachamim, and all of us come from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and unfortunately, not everybody, sometimes the thread does get snapped, for at least for a period of time. Eventually, lo yidach mimenu nidach, and people do come back with the Eibishter's help, but not always. So there's a lot about that. The Chofetz Chaim gave a moshel about that. He said when he was younger, when he was going around, traveling around, selling his svarim, so he would go, you know, there'd be in various towns. He'd know there was a certain person where he was welcome in his house, but then one time, he'd go there and knock on the door and the guy doesn't want to let him in. So he'd realize, you know, something has changed. The guy passed away and his son took over, or he himself became stingy or whatever. So unfortunately, the same thing as you have when you may have a family taka that they've had generations upon generations of Talmidei Chachamim, but eventually if they make the Torah unwelcome, then yeah.
Especially now
with the Ritus Adobos. Ritus Adobos, there is that.
They leave and then come back.
Yeah, there is that. There's also, for example, the fact, you know, the Gemara tells us in a couple of places, we have it in Rashi next week, that most children tend to resemble the mother's brothers. So if you have a Talmid Chacham, even from a family of Talmid Chachamim, marries a woman from a family of Amoratzim, and yeah, I mean, The Rambam has an expression about that. He says that unfortunately what may happen is then the father is not around for whatever reason to teach his son, and the mother doesn't know Keser HaTorah. She doesn't know the crown of Torah. She doesn't know what Torah is and the importance of it, and therefore, unfortunately, it falls by the wayside. Obviously, it doesn't mean, by the way, when we say Bas Ama Oretz in that connection, it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, for example, you have many, many fine families of Balei Tshuva where even though they didn't have a knowledge of Torah, they have a tremendous cheshik for it, and that they count as bas tamid chacham, but we're talking about, unfortunately, you have families that don't consider that as important. The Gemara goes on, Rabbi Akiva Raya de Ben Kalba Savua Hava. Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of Ben Kalba Savua. Now we know from the Gemara and Gittin that he was one of the tremendously rich people in the Yerushalayim in the years before the Churban. Chazite Brate de Havet Sania O'Malley. Ben Kalba Savor's daughter, her name was Rachel, saw Rabbi Akiva, the shepherd. She saw that he was tzniastic and that he had good midis. So he wasn't a Talmid Chacham, he was a complete Ama Oretz, but she saw that he has these good midis. And Marsha points out both of these are prerequisites for learning Torah. In fact, by the way, we see in a later time, even when Rabbi Akiva, after he'd become the great Rabbi Akiva, he still maintained his tzniastic ways. In particular, the Gemara in Brachas tells us, what's a real tzanua? Somebody who acts in a tzniastic way in the bathroom when nobody else is around, because he realizes that Eibishter is watching him, and we know Rabbi Akiva had that quality, as it says over there. So he's that, and he's mali, means that Marsha says noyach labrius. He's gentle and easygoing with people, and we know from Pirkei Avos, a person that ruach labrius noyach hemenu, that people approve of how he acts, and Hashem also approves of how he acts. So she saw that she had.
How do we know that Rabbi Akiva was snoring in the bathroom?
Ah, so the Gemara tells us over there that actually Benazai says I one time sneaked in after Rabbi Akiva and followed him to the bathroom to observe how he does things. And I asked him how he's so chutzpah dikti your Rebbe, and he says, Torah he v'lum and then he saw it. But yeah, it's a good question. Yeah.
Okay.
Onward. Tosfos actually brings up the point. We have the famous Gemara in Psochim, actually in connection with that whole Gemara about not marrying the daughter of an Ama Oretz, where Rabbi Akiva says on himself that when he was an Ama Oretz, he said, if only I could get a hold of Talmid Chacham, I would bite him like a donkey. And in fact, his Talmidim asked him, why like a donkey? Why not like a dog? He says, a dog at least is something the bite will heal. A donkey really breaks the bones. And yeah, so Tosfos says, it's not what it was. Is why he Taka did hate the Talmid Chachamim, but the vote is that it's because he thought the Talmid Chachamim themselves are Bali Gaiva. You think of it in the times when we had to be careful with Tumah V'Tahara, in the times of the Beis Mikdash, which is when Rabbi Akiva was still born, when the second Beis Mikdash was still standing, and for a period of time after that, when they had Parah Aduma ashes, when Chaverim Talmid Chachamim are careful with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara and Amei Oretz in general are not. Then you have all kinds of dinim. You have the end of Chagiga talks about, and in various other places throughout Shas, you have all kinds of detailed dinim of how Talmid Chachamim have to keep their distance from Amei Oretz. They can't touch them. They can't. They can't stay overnight in their houses. There's limitations on how they can borrow kalim from one another. So it made it seem like the Talmid Chachamim are very standoffish. So the Rabbi Akiva resented them for that. Once he became a Talmud Chacham himself, once he started learning Torah himself, he realized that it's not because of Gaiver or anything like that, because of looking down. And Amei Oretz, it's partially, that's how the halacha is. That's how it has to be.
Yeah, we did see, though, that whoever put his hand out to the Rebbe would shake his hand.
Fine, because nowadays we're not able to be careful with Tumah V'Tahara. But if we lived in a time, you know, when Mashiach comes and we have to be careful with Tumah V'Tahara again, you can bet that when people go and shake the Rebbe's hand, he's going to have to be careful. Are they Tomei or not? It's going to be Negea, whether afterwards he can eat Kodshim or not. You know, you can't play around with Halacha. Anyway, in Tosfos over here, there's also a parenthetical note bringing from the Ritzvahs, Peter Shira on the Gemara, that what it is there were different periods in Rabbi Akiva's lifetime. There was a period when he was not, when he did not have good midas, and that's when he spoke so negatively against the Chachamim. Later on, he developed good midas, but he had, when he went to start learning Torah. So even now, when he's ready to start learning Torah, then Rachel already saw those capabilities within him. So she says to him, "Ima kadashnalach, if I am willing to be makudish to you, to get married to you, aslot lebei rav, are you willing to go to the yeshiva to learn?" So he says, yes. Ikad shalei betzinos, she arranged kedushin with him in secret, but shadarte, and she sent him off to the Beis Medrash to learn. By the way, so first of all, the Gemara also tells the story in Nedarim with various other variations and details. But in addition, there are also a number of Midrashim that have interesting other details on this. In Avestid of Nassen, first of all, it mentions that when Rabbi Akiva went to first learn in Cheder, and obviously he didn't first go to a yeshiva, he first has to learn the basics, he has to learn the Aleph Beis and all. He was 40 years old at the time, we know. And Avestid of Nassen says that he went to Cheder together with his young son. Now, the Pashtos, that's not a son with him and Rachel, because what, she's going to wait 5 or 6 years till the kid is old enough to go to Cheder, and then first he's going to start going with his Tati? No, the Pashtos, it means that Rabbi Akiva had been married before and had a child from a previous marriage, and that's the son. Yesh Oimrim, that you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, throughout Shas, Tosfos mentions in some places that might have been this son. Or at least Tosfos says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha may have been a son of Rabbi Akiva. So what?
Divorce.
So it would mean that he's divorced, his wife had passed away. Yeah, doesn't say.
What?
How he has a son? Obviously, he was married before. I'm saying it says in all the stir of nothing.
So what it says?
It doesn't say one way or the other. It just says he has a son. Doesn't say what the story was before that. We don't have a complete day to day biography of Rabbi Akiva, you know. Another interesting thing, by the way, there's an interesting medrash that tells, first of all, everybody knows the story of Rabbi Akiva seeing the water dripping on the rock and realizing that if the water can penetrate the rock, it can penetrate his head. But then there's a less well-known story as well, where Rabbi Akiva starts going to learn in the cheder with his son, but he's embarrassed about it first. I mean, I'm a 40-year-old man. I'm going to sit together with a bunch of 5 and 6-year-olds, be learning four-year-olds, whatever, be learning Aleph Beis. So he wasn't sure. He wants to do it. So Rachel came. So the story continues in this medrash that Rachel came up with a great idea. They had a donkey. Now we're going to say, and then the Gemara mentions over here they were quite poor. And in Nedarim it tells also that they were very poor, but apparently they had enough that they were able to scrape enough money together to get a donkey. Anyway, so they would use that. Of course, you know, you're going to the market, you're buying food, you would load it on the donkey's back. So what she does is she plants a garden on the donkey's back. She puts some dirt over there, plants some seeds, and they start growing. Then one day she says to Rabbi Akiva, "Can you please take the donkey to the market to buy some food?" He has no choice, and of course he goes there, and everybody's making fun of him. But what can you do? You got to buy food, and he goes. The next day, again, she sends him out on an errand, and every day, and after a while, you can get used to everything, to anything. So after a while, you see a guy walking around with a donkey with a garden on the back. After how many times are you going to laugh at him already? So eventually people got over it. So then Rabbi Akiva realized, you know what, in the same way, fine, I go to the cheder the first few times, all the kids are going to be laughing. They're going to be saying, Aleph, and I'm going to be saying, Aleph. But, you know, you got to stick to it, and eventually they'll get over it. And they did. Anyway, continues the story. Shama Avua, Rachel's father heard what had happened. Apkami Beisei, he threw her out of his house. Adra Hano Minichsei, and he made a neder that she's not allowed to have any Hano from his possessions. Sure enough, Ozo Yosef Yud Beis Shini Bebei Rav, and Rabbi Akiva went off to learn 12 years in the Beis Medrash. He also, in the Gemara in the Nedarim, mentions more detail about it, about how desperately poor they were. There were other Midrashim that fill in various details. Ki also, when Rabbi Akiva came back after the 12 years, Aisi Bade Treser Alfi Talmidi, he came back accompanied by 12,000 Talmidim. He's coming back to town. Shamei Lahu Sava, then he overheard an old man Who says to his who's saying to his wife Rachel, Ad kama kamadabrit almanus chayus. Look, how long are you going to live like this? Like a living widowhood. Your husband is away for so long. It's like he's abandoned you. You're barely making ends meet. You have kids already. How can you do that? She says to the man, you know what, if my husband would listen to me, if I had a chance to tell him, Yosef Tresrach Shninachrini, he would go learn for another 12 years in the Beis Medrash. So Rabbi Akiva thinks to himself, in that case, I have her clear permission to go again. Sure enough, he went to sit another 12 years and learn in the Beis Medrash. An interesting point that a number of Achronim talk about the for various Balei Musar is why Rabbi Akiva doesn't at least go into his house, say hello to Rachel and all, hug his kids or whatever, and then go. There's a couple of interesting ideas in that. One interesting one is then it wouldn't be 24 years, then it would be 12 years and then another 12 years, which is not the same thing. The Reb Chaim Shmulevitz famously said a vort on this. He says this is an example where 12 plus 12 does not equal 24. You can't compare 24 straight years of learning to 12 years and then a break and then another 12 years. Then there's also there's more about it as well. Another point is if he goes into his house, it's going to cool off a little bit of his enthusiasm for learning, and then he's going to come back with the same enthusiasm afterwards. Lav dafka. And another point is as well, another interesting point that's made in this is like this: when he first goes off, of course, he's horoving in Torah, but a good part of what contributes to his success, we have to understand, must have been Rachel's tefillas all the years. I don't want that here. I married him knowing his milus. I know what capabilities he has. I want him to actually be able to accomplish them, to become a great Talmid Chacham. And she's davening from the bottom of her heart that it should be so. Now, imagine what would happen if he actually came into the house and she had a chance to see him as the Talmid Chacham that he was after 12 years. Sure, she might still daven that he's going to become an even greater Talmid Chacham, but it wouldn't be with the same tremendous intensity as before. Because now she would think, okay, at least he's already a Talmid Chacham. At least my tefillos have so far been mekuyim. So now when she davens afterwards for his hatzlacha, it wouldn't necessarily be with the same hishtapchus hanefesh, with the same intensity to the Eidishter that it has to happen. So therefore, better like she shouldn't even see him where he is yet than let him have a chance to grow those extra 12 years. Incidentally, by the way, there's a Yerushalmi in Psachim that says there were 13 years where Rabbi Akiva was in the Beis Medrash and he had never asked a question. So all that time, 13 years, which means the 12 years that we had here, plus another year when he's back, he's soaking up Torah like a sponge, but he's not asking anything. And so Rabbi Eliezer in particular thought that he must not be very much. Okay, he had Talmidim already, but Rabbi Eliezer, who was one of his Rebbeim, thought he must not amount to very much if he's not asking good questions in the Beis Medrash. Then the Mishnah mentions there in Psachim the debate between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about a din in Hilchus Pesach, and the Rishami says over there when Rabbi Akiva brought up his point and asked this question, Rabbi Yeshua, who was the other Rosh Yeshiva, says to Rabbi Eliezer, he says he uses a Lashon HaPosuk, from Sefer Shoftim. You see that nation, you see that people that you mocked, that you thought they're nothings, now go and fight against them. In other words, he tells Rabbi Eliezer, you thought till now that our Talmud Rabbi Akiva is not going to amount to very much. Now you're going to see what he's got. So sure enough, he learned for another 12 years in the Beis Medrash. Ki osen, when he came back, he came back with 24,000 Talmidim. These are the famous 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva that we talk about every year, Sfira time. Shama Devesu, in other places, by the way, in Yuvamis in particular, we learned it in terms of the Gemara had put it as 12,000 pairs, because as we know, Talmud Chachamim learn in pairs. They learn B'chavrusa, so therefore it was 24,000 Talmidim, but they pair up to learn Torah. Shama Devesu, so his wife heard that he's coming. She's going to go out to greet him, to greet her husband. So her neighbors say to her, "Sheili money lavush v'ichisoi. At least borrow some nice clothing and clothe and dress yourself instead of wearing the worn out clothing that you have." So she answers them with a pasuk, "Yedeh tzaddik nefesh behemtoi." The tzaddik knows even the needs of his animal, meaning in other words, the tzaddik. So even his animal, in other words, the tzaddik knows any from anything around him, any living creature that's around him, what they need. The same way he knows what I need, and he knows what I have available to me, and he's not going to look down on me because I'm not dressed in a bekovedik way. When she came to Rabbi Akiva, Noflal Apa, she fell on the ground on her face in front of him, and she's kissing his feet. Rabbi Akiva's are pushing her away. They don't know who this woman is. Some random woman is coming and grabbing the tzaddik's feet and kissing him. Amalahu Shavkua, said Rabbi Akiva, tells him, leave her alone. Shaliva Shalachem Shalahu. My Torah and all of your Torah, all 24,000 of yours, is all as a result of her. And there you have. She gets the Rebbe, in fact, points out in a Sicha, you know, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, we know, Stam Mishnah the mayor, and similarly you have Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda, and Stam Sifri is Rabbi Shimon, I think, and so on and so forth. Each of the major repositories of Torah Shabbat Peh is it comes from the way it was taught by one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, and Vecholu Al Libe de Rabbi Akiva. All of them are the way they learned it from Rabbi Akiva, which means that ultimately, when you get down to it, the entire structure of Torah Shabbat Peh, as we have it, all comes thanks to Rachel. B'chalal, you know, we talk about in Kabbalah, it's mentioned in the Zohar in various places, that Torah Shabbat Peh and Tanya, that Torah Shabbat Peh is compared to the wife. You have Torah Shabbat is like the husband, and Torah Shabbat Peh is like the father, and Torah Shabbat Peh is like the mother. So here you have the entire Torah Shabbat Peh stands on one mother of the Jewish people.
Behind every good man is a good woman.
Yes, and here very much so, yeah. Shoma Avua Da'osa Gavra Rabba Lamasa. Now, her father, Kalba Savua, heard that a great Talmid Chacham had come to town. He didn't know that it was his own son-in-law. Omar, he thinks to himself, Eza Lagabe, let me go to him, Efshad Mefer Nidroi. Maybe he'll be Mefer. By the way, Marsha points out, as far as the expression she used, Yedea Tzadik Nefesh Behemtoi, she's saying, you know, all these years ago, Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd, so he knows very well how it is with animals and all their needs, and the same way he's going to know that that I don't have anything important. Yeah. So her father heard, Omar, he thinks, Ezel Gabe, let me go to him, Efshir de Mefer Nidroi, maybe he can be Mefer, or rather Matir, my Neder. By now, I guess, you know, 24 years have passed. Kalba Savora has already regretted that he disinherited his daughter. Also a gabe, so he comes to Rabbi Akiva. Omale, and Rabbi Akiva asked him, "Adaita de gaver rabba minadarta? Did you make the neder even if this son-in-law of yours becomes a great person, a Talmid Chacham?" Omale, and Ben Kalba Savor says, "No, I feel a perek echad. I would have been satisfied even if he learned one perek in Torah. I feel a halacha achas. Then I would never have made such a neder and thrown her out." Omale, so Rabbi Akiva tells him, "Anohu, that's me. We can be matter neder. Nafal al anpe, Ben Kalba Savor fell on his face, v'nashke al kare, and he kissed him on the feet, v'yahavle palgo b'moine, and he gave him half his wealth." The Gemara in Dorim mentions there are six sources where Rabbi Akiva got his wealth from. We know Rabbi Akiva was very wealthy, and this was the first of the six. Then the Gemara later lists another five. Tosfos brings up the point, and a number of other Rishonim bring up the point. There's a concept when it comes to Nidorim called Ein Poischin Menoilad. Say, for example, a person makes a neder, I'm not going to have Hanah from Pliny. Then that Pliny ends up becoming, let's say, the sofer of the city, who writes everybody's shtaris and everybody's tefillin and whatnot. You can't go and then buy from him sifra, and can't go buy from him tefillin or shtaris or whatever, because you made a neder not to. I now you need him because he's the sofer of the town. Tough luck, that's nolad, that's something you can never have expected to begin with. The Gemara mentions in Nedarim also, the Gemara mentions in Nozer, another example of it would be, for example, there were people who had made a neder of Nazirus before the Churban, and then the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and that's an example of Noilad. You can't be matter their neder on that basis. So how is Rabbi Akiva being matter Kalba Savor's neder, when on the face of it, it's a classic example of Noilad? So Tosfos gives two answers. First of all, listen, he did go to the yeshiva after all. But derech kol, a person goes to the yeshiva, he's going to learn something. So therefore, it's not completely noilad. It's not completely out of left field, like this guy all of a sudden being appointed a sofer. Also, Tosfos says, because he made the neder specifically, he said that in other words, we have to understand that when he said the neder, it wasn't just, I'm making a neder, she's not going to have any hanof my nechassim. I'm making a neder. If she's going to marry and I'm an oretz like that, then I'm not going to let her have any hanof my nechassim. So there's an implicit atnai over there. And if he's not an ama oretz, then there won't be a problem. So therefore, now that he's not an ama oretz, then there's no more problem. Various other Rishonim point out various other there are various other angles that are brought up in that connection as well. One interesting one that Taz points out in the Halachas of Nedarim is that maybe this whole concept of in poschen menolad. Now, when it comes to being matir and neder, there's really two ways that you can do it. They're called Pesach and Charota. Pesach is you point out to the person, the Beis Din points out to the person that there's a certain consequence of this neder that he made, or a certain side effect of it, which if he had known of that, he wouldn't have made the neder. Then you have charota, which is where Parshat he regrets making the neder in the first place. The poskim talk a lot, which one is better to use, Pesach or charota? Can you even use charota by itself, etc.? There's a lot of discussion. But anyway, the Taz says, when there's charota, then you can be matter the neder based on that alone, even if the charota is a result of noilad. Here you have, Ben Kalba Savor is regretting that he did this. So even though he's regretting it because of noilad, nevertheless, that's a good enough reason to be matter the neder.
What about
Negev Adover? Oh, that's, well, no, because to be Matu and Nedu, it doesn't matter whether you're Negev Adover, but Dinim Mominus and Dinim Nefoshis, that matters too.
Because now he's getting...
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. I don't think that matters. As far as a Rav being Matu and Nedu, I don't think that matters whether he's Negev Adover.
Since a human being never knows what's going to be from one moment to the next, it's a good idea not to make a Nedu.
This is also true, but...
It comes out of, sometimes out of emotional problems.
This is indeed true, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Brate de Rabbi Akiva Avdol ben Azai Hochi. The daughter of Rabbi Akiva ended up doing the same kind of thing to Ben Azai, sending him off to the yeshiva to learn for many years. In fact, actually, Tosfos points out the Gemara elsewhere says that that Ben Azai did not necessarily end up marrying her. We know that Ben Azai said famously on himself, "Nafshi choshka b'Torah." We learned this in Yevamos. He said, "My soul, my neshama, is so deeply in love with Torah that I can't live a normal family life." So therefore, so the Gemara mentions the possibilities: was he maybe mekadesh her and then divorced her? Did they maybe actually do nisuin for a short time and then he divorced her? We know also from Chagiga that he passed away as a result of the Abba Shenichnasul Paradis. So, but in any case, we're saying that that Rabbi Akiva's daughter did the same kind of thing as far as sending him away to learn for many years. Behind Damri Inchi, this is like people say, Rechela Bosa Rechela Azla, the ewe, the female sheep, follows the female sheep. And there's a play on words over here because her mother's name is Rachel. As the mother does, so does the daughter do. So you see, what Rachel did for Rabbi Akiva is what their daughter did for Ben Azai.
Just like Leah and Dina.
Like Leah and Dina, indeed, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you have a little Lashon HaPasuk. Ki ima bita, like mother, like daughter, yeah. Yeah. The Gemara tells another story. Rabbi Yosef Brei de Rava Shadre Avur LeBei Rav. Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rava, his father Rava sent him to the yeshiva LeKamei de Rabbi Yosef to learn by Rabbi Yosef. Poskel is Shish Shnin, and the arrangement was that he was going to be away for 6 years. Ki have a tlas shni, where when 3 years had passed, Mata Mala Yom Kippur, it was Erev Yom Kippur. Omar, so the son, Rabbi Yosef, thinks to himself, Ezo v'achzinu le'enshi besi. You know what? Let me go home and see the members of my household. Let me at least see my wife after 3 years that I haven't b'chlal seen her. Now, Marsha points out that he had a good reason, Davka, to go on Erev Yom Kippur. The reason is because, like this, if he goes any other time of the year, you might think it's partially he has a taiva for his wife. He wants to have relations with her, and therefore he's coming home for that and abandoning his studies in the yeshiva. But it's Erev Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur night, you can't have relations anyhow. So therefore, so he did it davka then in order to make it clear that he's not coming for that, but rather partially he wants to see her. Shama Avua, but his father, Rava, heard that he's coming. Shokom Mona, he took a weapon, Venofakal Ape, and went out to confront his son. Omalei, he says, Zoynoscha or Zugoscha Nizkarta. What is this? You've remembered your Zoyna or Zugoscha would mean your mate, your wife. Now, how could he call her? How could he call her Zoynoscha? And in fact, Maram Shif says that's why the correct Girsa is supposed to be Zugoscha. But still, the Girsa is Zoynoscha. In other words, he's saying not anything against her, but you're acting like in a way as though she's like a Zoyna and you have such a taiva for her. Is that the right thing to do? To abandon your learning in the middle because of that. Zugoscha would mean your partner, would mean your wife. Ikadamri Omala Yoynoscha Nizkarta. The other version is that he tells him, you seem to have remembered your dove. Doves are faithful, as we know, one to their mate, but still, either way, Rava is saying to him a very sharp expression. In other words, like, what is this all of a sudden? You're abandoning, you're learning in your shiva in order to go see your wife. That's not what I expected of you.
What if it's her owner?
That's the thing. We're saying that Taman Chacham is supposed that Taman Chacham could be away for a couple of years with his wife's permission. Rava figured the original arrangement was 6 years, so he's supposed to stay away for 6 years. Like we said before, but Rabbi Akiva is 24 years. It shouldn't be 3 years and then a break of 3 years. Rava considered it should be a full 6 years straight. Itrud, so they got in, they got distracted with arguing back and forth. The result was, Loi Mar Ifsik, Loi Mar Ifsik, neither of them ended up eating Sudam of Sekis. Remember, this was all Erev Yom Kippur. So they got so busy with their argument back and forth about the pros and cons of Rabbi Yosef coming and Rava telling him you shouldn't have, that they ended up both missing the Sudam of Sekis. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Further on in the Perek, it talks about like this. So now you can have a situation where a wife, for some reason, is living away from, where a husband and wife are living away from each other for a period of time. An example could be where the husband is away on business for a long time, as we learned before. You might have, for example, a camel driver who's away for 6 months at a time, or whatever, a sailor who's away for 6 months at a time, a camel driver who's away for 1 month at a time, whatever. Or you could have various other. You could be away where he's away in the Beis Medrash or whatever. Whatever the case, the Mishnah describes, you can have a situation where he arranges with a third party that he's going to send money home, and that third party will go and buy food and supply it for the wife. So the Mishnah goes in and describes the details of how much of various kinds of foods, what's the minimum that has to be supplied to her. Rishonim discussed, does this also apply when the husband and wife are together, that these are the minimum amounts he has to give her? Or maybe we could say if they're living together, then whatever the husband makes do with, that she has to make do with also. In any case, the Mishnah gives a list of things. And eventually, one of the things, so now one thing that's missing in the list is wine. Now, in those times, they drank wine like we drink soda. So it was a very common drink. But that's missing in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, "Ein poiskin yenis la'isha." Beis Din does not make these kinds of arrangements as far as a woman that she should have wine to drink during the time when her husband was away. V'im toimar, you're going to ask, wait a minute, there's a posik that implies that married women should be given wine. You have a posik where the Navi Hoshea compares the Jewish people to a wife who's being unfaithful to her husband, as we often find that metaphor used throughout Tanakh. And the expression is, Elcha achrei ma'ahavai, she's thinking to herself, let me go and follow my lovers, meaning the Avodah Zarahs and the various Goyish nations that the Jewish people are trying to make alliances with. Noisne lachmi, the ones who she thinks provide my bread, umeimai, and my water, samri, my wool, or fishti, and my linen, shamni, my oil, v'shikuyai, and shikuyai. Now, on the face of it, shikuyai means my drinks, malosh and mashke. Now, it can't mean water, Marsha points out, it already said water. Besides which, also, since it's together with shamni, so we should understand that it means what liquid always goes together with wine in the Torah. Whenever you have mentioned tira, they always go together. Tira shviyitzar, wine and oil. So therefore, if we're mentioning oil over here, then the pashtus shikuyah refers to wine. Now, to be sure, my Rav Shif says, I mean, what's the question? The Pasuk is talking about a woman who's acting in an adultery. She's going and committing adultery. So what kind of a question is that to prove for a good woman? Nevertheless, the fact that she uses the expression shikuyai, my drinks, implies like the drinks that I'm entitled to normally. So we see that a woman is entitled to have wine. The answer is shikuya doesn't mean wine. Dvarim sho'isha mishtek kekes aleihem. It means things that a woman has a tremendous desire for. Umayninu tachshitin, namely, I mean jewelry or cosmetics. So this woman in the metaphor in the pasuk over there is saying that she's thinking that the Avodah Zarah or the Goyish nations or both are supplying all my needs, including even cosmetics and jewelry. Meanwhile, as the pasuk goes on to say, she doesn't realize that Hashem is the one who provided all of this. The point is, you don't have any proof from the pasuk there that a woman should be getting wine. Why not? We'll see further down in the ois. So the Gemara continues, Dorash Rabbi Yehuda ish kvar niburaya, or giburaya, v'amilo ish kvar nipurchayo, different gibusoyos over here, whatever, he comes from a town of that name. Minayin she'en poiskin yenis l'isha. How do we know at this point that we don't arrange a stipend of wine for a woman? So Shinema, we find in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, you have Elkanah and his family have come to Shiloh to bring korbanos, and Chana is bothered by the fact that for all these years she's been childless, etc. So the pasuk says, "Vatokam Chana achrei ochlo v'shiloi v'achrei shosai." Chana got up after the eating in Shiloh and after the drinking. Now, Poshet Pshat is the word ochla in that pasuk does not have a mapik, does not have a dot in the hay. If it did, if it was ochlo, then it would mean her eating. It would mean that she ate. But the psukim there make it clear she didn't eat because she was very upset. And now, so the pasuk says, "Achle ochla b'shila v'achle shosoi." In the simple pshat, the words ochla and shosoi are infinitives, after the eating and after the drinking. However, the Gemara is taking it over here, Tosfos explains, the Gemara is taking it over here in the sense as if it said ochla with the mapik hey, meaning after she ate. But it doesn't say achle shosoi sa, which means after she drank. It says achle shosoi, meaning after the drinking. So that means shosoi v'loy shosos. It doesn't say shosos or shosoysa or some expression like that, which would mean her drinking. It only mentions after her eating. So we understand that she didn't drink. Why? Because women aren't supposed to have wine, as the Gemara is in the middle of explaining. So now Maharsha points out, you could say, because the same way as she didn't eat because she was upset, she wasn't drinking either. But nevertheless, when it says achrei ochla, meaning after the time of eating, it should have said achrei shesosa, meaning after the time when she would have drunk if she weren't so upset. So therefore, so the fact that it doesn't say like that implies still that she wasn't drinking at all. Nevertheless, though, Eli mistakenly thought, he saw that Elkanah had been eating and Elkanah was drinking together with it as well. He thought she had eaten and he thought she had drunk as well, which is why he accused her of being drunk as the psukim go on over there.
Isn't there some kind of opinion that if the husband's out of town, the woman should not be drinking wine unless he tells her to?
That's what we're talking about over here. That's the topic that we're talking about over here. So the Gemara asks, Elamei at ochlo v'loy ochloy. What do you mean then? In that case, the pasuk says ochlo. Does that imply not ochloy, implying that he doesn't eat, that he's not given a stipend to food? The answer is no. Hochinami, ochlo v'loy ochlo, hochinami. You're going to say the same thing. And the answer is no. What we're doubting is anan midashani krob dibure kamin. We're talking about because the posik changes the syntax and uses a different expression than you would have expected. After all, the psukim are talking about her. It's focusing on her. She was upset. She didn't want to eat. She's crying, etc. My time is shani. Why all of a sudden, when it comes to the word shosoi, instead, does it use the word shosoi rather than shosos, which would mean her drinking? Fine, maybe it wouldn't mean that she actually drank then because she was upset and she couldn't eat or drink, but at least it would imply that she could have drunk. Instead, it says shosoi, with a hay over there, which refers to him, implies. So therefore, that we can learn from that. Therefore, so in other words, the fact that it says ochla, it doesn't teach us one way or the other, because yeah, it's talking about her. So naturally, it would be talking about her eating. But instead of the word for her drinking, should be shosas or shosoysa or something like that. And the fact that it doesn't teaches that distinction teaches us that she's not supposed to drink. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Now there can be they can arrange for her wine not necessarily to drink but rather to use in cooking. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabba Bohu, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Maisib Kalosish and Nakdimin Ben Gurion." It happened with the daughter-in-law of Nakdimin Ben Gurion, who was another one of the rich people in Yerushalayim before the Churban. Sheposku l'chachamim sasayim yain l'tzikik deira. The Chachamim arranged for her a stipend of 2 saw of wine just for tzikik deira. Tzikik deira are like little. Oh, like spices, like condiments and all that accompany the main dishes. So like they're a secondary or tertiary thing in the meal. It's not the main course. It's not even maybe the side course. It's like a side of a side, kind of just like to flavor things. So they arranged for her 2 saw of wine. A saw is like 2 or 3 gallons. So at least. Some posts can make it even more when you consider a shiur mikra. According to some posts, is around 250 gallons. Then it comes out according to them a saw is around 6 gallons. So he's saying she's getting anywhere between about 4 and 12 gallons every week just of wine just for her tzikik deira. Me'erev Shabbos la'erev Shabbos from 1 week to the next. Omer lahen, she says to them, kach tifsiku l'vnei seichem. She says to them, like an annoyance, this kind of thing is what you should arrange for your daughters. Meaning, in other words, she's saying, I don't consider that to be enough. For my standard of living, I expected more. Now, usually you would think the Chacham should answer amen to such a thing. Fine, she means it sarcastically, but the fact is it would be a big bracha if they can be that rich. However, the Gemara's, and in fact, in the next perek, the Gemara gives an example where they were arranging something for her, a stipend of food, and they did say, or as far as Tachshitin over there, and they did say amen when she said a sarcastic expression like that. But here they didn't. The Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a braisa, Shemeres Yavam, Haisa, because this daughter of Nachdiman Ben Gurion was a Shemeres Yavam. Her husband has passed away. She's waiting for her husband's brother to do Chalitza or Yibum. So they didn't want to answer Amen at that point because they don't want to say Amen that our daughters should be in that same situation of being Shemiras Yavam. So the Gemara continues, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kois Echad Yofil Isha. 1 cup of wine is fine for a woman. Beis Nivulhu, if she drinks, and this is talking about when her husband is in town. Beis Nivulhu, 2 is already a degradation for her. Nivulhu, it's a degradation for her. It starts having a bad effect on her. Gimel Tevas Vepeh. Once she has 3 cups of wine, she's already going to start demanding tashmish verbally, where a wife is not supposed to do that. She's supposed to make it clear to her husband in various ways that she wants it, but not actually say so in so many words. Dalet, if she has 4, Afilu Chamur Tevas Bashuk Ve'ena Makpedes. Once she has 4, she'll already even proposition a donkey in the marketplace and have no embarrassment. In other words, by that time, she's so far gone in her taiva that she won't even care who it's with. However, Rava says that's only when her husband is not there with her. But if her husband is with her, there's no problem. Now, Maharsha says that would refer to the one or two to the one or two cups. Once you're up to three cups already, then it's a problem for her to be asking for tashmish prepare is a problem even with her husband, and therefore we're saying she shouldn't even be having three. So the Gemara asks about Chana de Baila Ima Havoi. What do you mean though? Chana is with her husband. They're both there together. She and Elkanah are both there in Shiloh. And we still said that the pasuk implies that she wasn't given wine. The answer is Afsinoi Shiny. It's different because there were guests over there. And they couldn't have relations as long as they're guests over there. How do we know that guests are also in Tashmash Amita? The Pasuk says at the end of the story over there, they woke up early in the morning and they left Shiloh. They returned and came to their house in Ramah. And now it says Elkanah knew his wife Chana, and she became pregnant, implying only now that they're back home, but not when they're traveling. So we learn from that that a traveler, a guest, when in somebody else's house, is not allowed tashmish, so therefore she couldn't be drinking wine in Shiloh, because then that would inflame her tivus, and there's no way to satisfy them at that point. The poskim point out, and we know this as a practical matter, people do this all the time, if you have your own room and you bring your own linens, then it's not an issue. The reason why an achsanoi is also a tashmish amita is basically because then the hosts, when they wash the linens, they're going to see zera on it, and it's going to be a gnai to the couple that stayed there, that they're going to know that you had relations, and they shouldn't be knowing such things, but if you have your own linens, then it's not an issue. In this connection, as far as women having wine, the Gemara tells Choyma devesu da Abaya. Choyma, the wife at this point, she's a widow of Abaya because Abaya had passed away. Asoyla kamei de Rava. She came to Rava to Omrele. She says psoikli mizoni. Arrange for me that I should get mizonis. My husband passed away. I need mizonis from the estate until my ksuba is paid off. As the Gemara discusses in great detail in various parts of this masechta. Pasakla. Okay, so he arranges for her the amounts. She asked, "Soikli chamra, arrange for me that I should also get a certain amount of wine." Amalah, Rava says, "I don't think so. Your dina ben Nachmeni, do I have a shosi chamra? I know Nachmeni, which is another name for Abaya, that he didn't drink wine. Now, b'pashtus, that would be because he was poor. However, there is an interesting explanation. Abaya, we know, was a kohen. Abaya mentions in a couple of places in Shas, it was actually in Daf Yomi just a couple of days ago, that in principle, according to the Chachamim, a Kohen nowadays should never be able to drink wine, because what happens, the Beis Mikdash might be built any moment, and he's going to be drunk and not able to do the Avodah. Rebbe points out, listen, I mean, it's going to take time until we figure out what Mishmo he's in, and what Mishmo is supposed to be on duty this week, and meanwhile I'll have time to sober up, therefore Kohenim can drink wine. So Abaya comments in a couple of places in Shas, you know who Kohenim follow nowadays when they drink wine, they're following the opinion of Rebbe. But Abaya himself may not have held that way. He may have held the halacha ought to be like the chachamim, and therefore he was machmir on himself and didn't drink wine. Anyway, so Rava says to his almana, I know that he didn't drink wine. Amrele, she says, Chaya demar, I swear by the Rebbe's life, by your life, da'ava mashkule b'shufrozi, that he was giving me to drink wine in shufrozi, which Rashi describes as long, long goblets, like you have those long, skinny goblets that sometimes you have by simchas, kihai, that are the size of this, and she's showing them with the length of her arm. So he himself may not have drunk wine, but he definitely gave me wine. Bahadi to kamachavile, as she's showing him with her arm to show how tall the cups were, igalidra, her forearm was uncovered. Her sleeve slipped down. Nuffel nahoda bebedina. There was a light shone in the Beis Din because she was so beautiful. Her skin shone with such a glow that like there's a light now in the Beis Din that there wasn't there before. Come Rava got up. Alla Beisa. He went to his house. Tova labas Rav Chista, and he asked the daughter of Rav Chista, who was his wife, that I'm in the mood and I want to have tashmish. He had been aroused by what he had seen, and now he wants to make sure to use it in a tohurdik way with his wife. So she asked him, who was today in this medrash that all of a sudden you have such a taiva? He tells her, Nafka Abastra, Rav Chista's daughter, Rava's wife, went out and followed her. She started hitting her with a lock of a chest. Until she had thrown her out of the entire city of Mechuza, or Rabbi Yaakov Emden says maybe Mechuza means the neighborhood. Whatever. Omr Allah, she says to her, you've already killed three husbands. The Gemara mentions in Yevamos that this Choyma had already previously been married three times. Abaya was her latest husband, and each of her husbands had passed away young. And now you want to kill a fourth. In other words, you're coming to the Beis Medrash and trying to and showing off your beauty to my husband Rava, so that he should have, so he should want to marry you, and then he's going to end up being you're the fourth one. And we know she's saying to her, look, you're katlonis. La halacha, there's machloikas and yevamis. When a woman has had husbands pass away, is it after two or after three that she shouldn't remarry again? Everybody agrees that after three she shouldn't. She's considered a katlonis, and therefore Rava's wife is accusing Choyma, Abaya's Amana, that you're trying to do that. You're trying to make my husband Rava be your fourth victim.
Why she picked up the hand?
She picked up to show him the length of the cup. Like my husband used to give me wine in cups this big. But as she was holding up her hand like that, her sleeve slipped down and Rava saw some of her skin, and yeah. So Rava. Even you know what the Gemara says in Sukkah, the Gemara says, Kola Godol Mechaveiro, Yitzre Godol Hemenu. The greater a person, the greater a tzaddik, the greater, in a way, the greater is Yetzahara. The Gemara actually tells over there a story involving Rava himself, where he came to realize that. So yeah, that's how it is. All right. Yoimiyah Mashiach Golo, Yud Beis Tevis. So we know the fasts are going to become Yom Tovim in a way they're going to be even greater than Purim that Eber talks about in a Sicha in Tavshin Nun Aleph. Purim we know is also not going to be Batal Asid Lavay. So we know the Chiddush about Purim is unlike the rest of the Yom Tovim, which are going to be less important when Mashiach comes. Purim will still be the importance, but even relative to the Giluyim of Yemos Mashiach, even higher than Purim, we'll see the greatness of Purim, and therefore now that's Purim as a Yom Tov that is now. The Yom Tovim that are going to become new Yom Tovim when Mashiach comes are obviously going to be on an even greater level than that new Yom Tovim that have just been introduced. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos, of things not to do on Shabbos, which are not malachas per se. Now the pasuk says v'daber dover. So we said that you're not allowed to speak about matters of business or other mundane things like that on Shabbos. So one thing actually we were in the middle of talking about is that so here it says cheftzecha. Now it says cheftzecha. From that we learn only chafotzecha, your needs are also, but cheftze shamayim, things that have to do with Hashem's business, that you're allowed to on Shabbos. One example we talked about in a previous sif about going to the tchum and waiting there till Shabbos is over in order to do business or whatever. That kind of thing would be allowed for a tzorech mitzvah. So that kind of thing, to walk to the edge of the tchum and wait there till Shabbos is over, where there's a mitzvah involved, that would be mutter. Another example, let's say, for example, you need to go to talk to the government on behalf of the Jews, so Chei Rabim is also considered like Chefze Shemayim for that purpose.